Walter and Wagner Caldas grew up in the slums of Rio de Janeiro. Their parents introduced them to classical music, urging them to stay away from drugs and violence. That act was the start of a remarkable journey. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Walter and Wagner Caldas now live in Cedar Falls, Iowa. They're graduates of the University of Northern Iowa and the leaders of the band, the Brazilian Twins. They've developed a unique sound, drawing on their classical training and mixing it with a love of pop music. I'll talk with the twins this hour about their journey to Iowa, their music, and Wagner's recent battle with a rare form of cancer. Later in the hour, the search for a new Steinway grand piano for a grand new concert hall. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Back in 2006, public radio listeners were introduced to Walter and Wagner Caldas when NPR's Julie McCarthy visited their home in Rio de Janeiro and prepared this report for Morning Edition.
It's rare when music isn't flowing through the home of Jonas Caldas and his wife, Amalia. Son Wagner slips his violin under his chin and steps into his tie-lined rehearsal room, the family bathroom.
Yeah, the acoustics are great.
The 21-year-old with a dazzling smile.
That's just a little bit of that story from 2006. That radio story started a chain of events that would eventually lead the twins to Iowa. They now live in Cedar Falls. They're graduates of the University of Iowa and the leaders of the band, the Brazilian Twins. And they are here with me today, Walter in Des Moines today. Hello, Walter.
Hello. Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today.
Nice. Thanks for having me.
And Wagner is on the line with us from Iowa City today. Hello, Wagner.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for being here today. And Wagner, I know a lot of your fans have been following your health journey as you battle a rare form of cancer, and we will talk about that more later in the hour. But as we get started today, I want to go back to the very beginning. And I know the story has been told many times that your father is a violin maker. And that seems kind of like an unlikely career for him to pursue. How did that happen? How did he become a violin maker?
Yeah, so it started because my grandma didn't have the condition to raise the kids. So she had to put my father and his brothers in the orphanage. And in this orphanage, growing up in an orphanage, they had the chance to learn several different,
trades? A career?
Trades, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And one of the trades was working with woods. And my dad picked the work with woods. And that's how he started making violin in the orphanage. And he came out, worked as a truck driver for a couple of years to build up the money to start his own shop. And 8 years later, after being a truck driver, he was finally able to start his shop, and that's how he became a violin maker.
Well, and Walter, so your father was a violin maker, but given the fact that you were growing up quite poor in the slums of Rio de Janeiro, it wasn't exactly a given that the children of a violin maker would become musicians. How did it come about that you and Wagner started learning to play the violin?
Now, at that time when we started, it wasn't like at all, like a person from that reality, they actually get to play that instrument. So that was very, very unusual. And we did because he couldn't play. He needed someone to try his instrument. So we were the guinea pigs at that time.
So he just wanted to hear what they sounded like, so
yes,
you would play them.
Yes, that's how it started.
But you also got an unusual opportunity to take lessons. Tell me how that happened.
Yeah, because he didn't have money and he needed someone to try the instrument, we had to learn, but he didn't have money to pay for the lessons. So he made a deal with the lady who used to teach the violin in this, I forgot the name, this institution. So the deal was he would fix all the instruments in the school in order for us to have the lesson for free. So that's how it worked.
How old were you when that happened?
We started pretty old. Usually when people start playing violin as a kid, they start when they are 5, sometimes even 3, 4 years old. We were 11. So that was already really old for the...
Well, and Wagner, when you discovered that you would have the opportunity to take lessons, and I know your mother was very excited about this opportunity, what was your reaction? Did you want to take violin lessons?
We hated.
He hated more than I did.
That's right.
What up, Wagner?
What about Jay?
What up, man? Good to hear you.
So
was a horrible idea.
Yeah, it was horrible.
So what made you keep going? Was it your mother?
Yes.
for 3 years at least, we were forced to go to the lessons and learn the violin without liking it. And the reason why was because my mom especially wanted us to play the violin. My dad wanted us to try, but he was never very, you know, like instructed about this. Oh, you have to go now. That was my mom's job.
Yeah.
So your mother was pushing it very hard. Walter, why do you think it was so important to your mother?
That's a good question. I'm going to ask her today. I think it was she was very protective, and my mom is one of those moms, you know, like she's tough, like, you come here, I'm going to whoop you, you know? My mom was that kind, and I think that the reality that we grew up and what she saw around us, the only thing she wanted at the time was to get us out of that reality, you know?
Well, and tell me about the reality that you were living in, because your peers were not at home practicing the violin. What was going on in your community?
Yeah, because of the community that we came from, it made it way harder. It's a very, very close together community, and it's a very big community. And the kids, we didn't have an education. There was no school. There was no going to school. And the kids were in the streets every day playing soccer, playing every kind of games. And that's what maybe leaned them in a... upper age. When they got older, they turned into drug dealers and stuff.
So there was a lot of drugs, a lot of violence.
Yeah, a lot of violence. My mom saw that pattern and she was afraid. That's why she tried to introduce us to a new culture.
To get it easy.
Yeah, that was her mindset. But the reality just got worse from where we came from. It's very, very, very common for us to see people killing and getting killed, and the body stays on the street. Like when they kill somebody, they leave the body there for days, 2-3 days. It's normal. It's a whole different reality.
And you saw friends of yours getting killed?
Oh, yeah, like since a very, very young age.
We would have a conversation with our friends while they were holding guns in front of us, you know, doing drugs in front of us. That was just normal for us to grow up and seeing those things. It was very normal to get in a group of friends, and a couple of our friends had guns on them and all this stuff. So I think that was my mom's idea. She was trying to protect us from that reality. And that's why we suffered for 3 years learning the violin.
So you suffered for 3 years learning the violin. What changed? Do you remember when it changed into something that you actually loved?
Yeah, so what happened was that was bad for us is because classical music was not part of that reality at all. We never, none of us in that neighborhood listened to classical music. And then, out of nowhere, we are supposed to go into a room and
play.
Know everything not even, about classical music and do scales for hours and all the techniques that the violin requires. That was totally different world for us, you know? And meanwhile, our friends were playing on the street.
Yeah.
So that was horrible to put that those two worlds together.
And so another thing, the violin is such a serious instrument. It requires so much from the musician. You have to practice. You have to lock yourself in the room 4 or 5 hours per day. And we are not at that age. We are not at that, you know, we are not that mature to actually lock ourselves in the room and practice.
So what changed for you, Walter? Was there a moment where you thought, wait, I'm actually loving this now?
Yes, yes. I think Wagner would agree with that. We started by ourselves doing the violin, so that was very tough on us. And people would make fun of us, our friends and everything. But then this guy in Brazil, he started teaching music in your favela. Favela is the name of the place we came in. It's slums. We call it favela. So he started teaching music for the kids of the community. And his idea was the same. I'm going to do something for the kids in this community so they don't go through, you know, the same pattern of drug dealing and all this stuff. So then we have more people in our age on your side. So that made a little easier for us. The people start, all the kids start liking and
you weren't
fun.
Alone anymore.
Yeah, we are not alone. And then, on top of that, we start playing, like performing. And that, I think that was the, that made a huge difference. Because now we start traveling. We didn't get paid. Usually when we performed at that time, we got paid with food. So there was an event. They would invite us to play and then I can give you free food. So we would go for the food. So that's when it started. Like, yay!
you had an incentive
yeah.
now.
Yeah, now we had an incentive.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Walter and Wagner Caldas. They go by the band name, the Brazilian Twins, and they are talking with me today about their musical journey, their journey through life as well. They now live in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Walter is with me from Des Moines today, and Wagner is on the line in Iowa City. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, and we'll go out to the break with one of their original compositions, Asa Branca. This is the Brazilian Twins. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm talking today with Walter and Wagner Caldas. They're known as the Brazilian Twins. They front a band that is based in Cedar Falls, Iowa. But, of course, they come from Brazil. They grew up in the slums of Rio de Janeiro and have taken a really remarkable journey to get them to where they are today. And Walter, so you were playing violin, the two of you were playing violin, and you were starting to really get attention for what you were doing. You were performing with a youth orchestra, and I know that you had been invited to perform in New York City already before this National Public Radio story happened.
Yes.
What were you going to do at that point? You were 21 years old. You were musicians. Did you have, I'm sure you had dreams. What were your plans, your goals for the future at that point?
That is such a good question. At that point, at 21, we had no idea. We were just living life by the day, and we were doing very well, like, with the music, but we didn't have a plan. We were just, you know, letting life take us, and that was about it. It changed when we got to school and everything. And now it's a whole different.
Right. Well, so this story airs on NPR and someone hears the story who's affiliated with the World Food Prize in Des Moines. And they, I'm going to let you know that Wagner just had to drop off the line. We'll get him back in just a moment. But I'll lean on you, Walter, right now.
Okay.
So the World Food Prize came calling, and they said, hey, we want to bring you to Des Moines, Iowa, to perform one song during the ceremony where we award the World Food Prize laureate. Had you ever heard of Iowa before that point?
Never.
So what did you think when they made that invitation?
Yeah, when they called, it was weird already by the NPR. They watched the performance in Brazil and asked for the interview. I was like, oh, sure. We gave the interview, and she was speaking English. That was the first time ever that we heard English.
Really?
Yeah, it was
and
the first time.
And you didn't speak a word of English
at
that point.
Not at all. I thought it was so strange. And we kept, like, staring at her. And there was a lady translating, but we thought that interview was not going to go anywhere. It's just an interview. And then they called us through that interview. Hey, I heard about you guys and talked to us, inviting us to come. All right, let's do it. But then they wanted only my brother and I, and we had never, ever played by ourselves before.
So you wondered, why aren't they inviting the whole orchestra?
We tried so hard. We was like, oh, no, we have an orchestra. Oh, no, we want just the two of you. No, what about four? Four, let's do four. No, two. Yeah, three. And then, no, just the two of you. And we were very afraid because, number one, we had never played together before, and two, we had no idea how we were going to get to Iowa. But then, yeah, let's do it.
And then you did come to Iowa, and you were just planning to perform that one song. And in the audience that night was the president of the University of Northern Iowa. Did you talk to him that night?
No.
No?
I had it translated, so the translator pretty much just told him, Ben Allen, our story, and he got very, emotional, and he decided to help. It was very, he thought, like, really quick, because right there he offered, hey, would you like to study?
Wow. And Wagner, you're back with us. I'm so glad. When president of UNI, Ben Allen, offered to bring you to Cedar Falls to study, what was your reaction?
Yeah,
well,
let's do it.
I knew that was going to happen,
Just shut up. Dude.
No, yeah, that was crazy. We just came. We had no idea what we were putting ourselves up
into,
to. We did a great show. It was very nice.
One song.
One song. We just played. We had the chance to play one song. And Balt and I, different than the other musician, there were some other musicians in the background there getting ready to play. And they were very nervous because there was TV and there was a huge deal. And we just got in and had fun, look at each other and start playing, having fun. And I think that's what helped us to captivate the audience. And there was a huge surprise when Ben Allen came. Yeah, we thought he was going to be just another person talking to us about the show. And then he threw the offers on us, and we were just like, what? Come to United States?
We were very happy. Like, very, very, very happy.
Yeah, that was crazy, because all we knew about university in the United States was through
the movies.
We watched movies.
Yeah, I could not believe we were going to go to those places in the movie. That was amazing.
And you kind of didn't go to those places in the movie. So it took another year and a half before all the paperwork got sorted and everything, right? Before you actually made your way to Cedar Falls?
And we were the whole time, it was a secret. Wagner and I, we decided not to tell anyone.
You didn't tell anyone?
Not even my mom and dad. They didn't know.
Wow.
Yeah, they found out like 2 weeks, 3 weeks before.
Oh, I wish I'd been a fly on the wall when your parents found out. What did they do?
Yeah, that was funny. because we didn't believe that was going to be something was going to happen.
Yeah.
That's how out of reach that was for us. So we decided just that. Never mind.
And then things just start working out, and like he starts sending pictures to you and I.
And papers to fill out.
Yeah, papers to fill out, and we just said, let's do it. When we saw, we were at the last step, okay, we got to tell them. And we told him, hey, mom, we got a chance to salt and die, going on a trip. Okay, where are you guys going? Yeah, we got a chance to go to United States and live there for a couple of weeks, study.
She didn't want, of course.
And then she didn't want us to come. And we are excuses. You were the one.
Oh, yeah. She didn't want you to come.
Yeah.
No, she didn't. You were the one who started this whole deal. We didn't want to play the violin
in the first place.
Yeah, now it's your fault. And then you had to go to kind of rehab with her. Yeah. Hey, mom, it's going to be all right.
Oh, I'm sure she's so proud, though.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, Walter, why don't you tell me? I mean, when you had seen universities in the United States in the movies, but you came to Cedar Falls, Iowa, which is a beautiful community. It's the place that I grew up, but it doesn't really look like what you see in the movies. What was your reaction when you got to Cedar Falls?
The first shock, Wagner and I, we left Brazil without having, like, we didn't go online to look for Iowa to see, to study what it was. We just hopped in the airplane and that was it. So the first...
You had no idea what to
expect. No idea. We had no idea. So we landed in Des Moines at the airport. Beautiful day, sunny. We stepped outside. We almost died cold.
Wait, when
frozen.
Did you arrive?
It was August.
In August?
It was really cold already. But it didn't match the day, you know, how beautiful the day
looked. It was unusually cold.
Yeah. It was sunny and beautiful, but it was really cold. So that was the first shot. And we didn't have any coats, anything. We didn't know it was cold.
Yeah, the cold here is very different than the cold we get in Brazil. We never get this cold.
So
then I went to UNI. This is funny. I got to UNI. I saw one building, and I thought that was the whole university. I thought the students were sleeping there. They lived in that building. And, oh, my God, everybody's sleeping. Look at that. I thought that the campus was only one building, and then we went for a tour. And I was like, oh, my God.
There's so much.
There's so much. It's so beautiful.
Oh, wow. Well, and did anyone warn you about winter? I mean, if you arrived in August and you were cold, there's a lot more coming after that.
Yes. A few weeks later, we start meeting people. They start telling us, hey, it's going to get cold. So some people, we had a lot of volunteer people helping us. They were very, very helpful. They got us coats, and so that was very good. We were very well accepted in Iowa.
I'm talking with Walter and Wagner Caldas. They are the leaders of the band, the Brazilian Twins. They live in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And I need to fast forward a little bit because, of course, you went to school and you became a part of the community and you started performing on campus, you decided to form a band. And I think, Wagner, I think you're the one who said that first time when you performed on stage with a band, that was the moment that you knew that's what you really wanted to be doing.
Yes. Everything, the whole band started was kind of an accident. We had never been part of a band before. No. We never played with other musicians as a band. And we decided to put this group together. And being on stage in front of all those people and getting that energy back was like, okay, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah,
I think the
difference was we were used to play with orchestra. We were part of a group of musicians, like 100 musicians. And now people are paying to see you. The responsibility was so big. Like, you have to deliver the best. You have to have those people have the best time of their lives. It's so frightening. Like, you are on a stage. Yeah. The light is on you. Everybody is looking at you. So that was what caught us. Like, oh, yeah, I love it.
So it's frightening, but you love it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to talk about your music because, I mean, you have this classical background as violinists. When you perform, often now it's you on the violin, Walter, and Wagner, you're playing the ukulele much of the time. And you
yeah,
have
I'm
this...
I'm a ukulele player.
Okay.
Come on. Yeah.
When did the ukulele start for you? When did that come into the picture?
The ukulele start for me when I start seeing that my brother played the violin way better than me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, time to change.
Finally, he accepted.
No, what happened was that we were playing both violins together for a long time. We did violin, duo on violin. But then I started noticing that was kind of getting boring. And we need a little bit of harmony in the group. And I had a little bit of background on ukulele. I knew how to play a couple chords here and there. And then I just started taking a little bit more serious the ukulele and introduced to our shows with Walter and I. And when we saw that was the instrument that was going to be part of a band, which is very unusual. You don't have
right.
a four-piece band with ukulele and violin and drums and bass, which was perfect, you know?
Well, it's so much fun to watch the videos of you performing. I've never gotten the chance to see you live in person, but you have so much energy and you really seem to connect with people. You look like you're having so much fun and the audience is having so much fun. You really seem to bring a lot of joy to the stage. Is that what you hope to communicate with your music, Walter?
Yes. I have a dream. I have many, many dreams. You see, I sound like Martin Luther King. I have a dream. But I have a dream. And the music is part of it. We saw where we came from, and some people, they have trouble going through life. And we believe we can help. And music is just the weapon to take us there. And that's what we do. We give a four-hour show without swearing, without doing none of those things. We pick pop songs that there is a message on it. We try really hard to have people leaving the show with something that they can remember, something that might change their day, their night, or even their lives. And that's why we have so much fun. This is the way that we chose to make a difference.
And I need to ask you, because the latest part of your journey, Wagner, has been with your cancer. You were diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, a very rare form of cancer. And it started with pain in your left arm, which as a musician was extremely difficult to deal with. How are you doing with your treatment?
Oh, my God, I'm beating the hell out of this thing.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, so I got diagnosed with cancer 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. I started feeling very, very uncomfortable pain in my arm, my left arm. So it took a while for me to actually do something about it because I thought it was just a... something that went wrong with my nerve, and okay, it's going to take time to go back anyway. But that got in a point that was too much pain. And then I went to the doctor. They thought it was something. They thought it was a pinched nerve. I went to surgery. And 2 months after my surgery, the pain was still the same. Nothing had changed. And I went back to the same doctor, and he couldn't figure out. And this day I was at home, looking in the mirror, and I saw this huge lump on my left arm. Took it back to the same doctor. I think I found the problem. And he sent me to IRC. That's when I found out I had a Ewing sarcoma cancer. It's a very rare type of cancer. And now I'm fighting it, doing treatment and chemotherapy and radiation and trying to get over this.
And the reason we're on the phone today is because you are in Iowa City waiting for yet another treatment, right?
Yes, I have another treatment in a couple of minutes, actually. In the next 30 minutes, I have to go get my radiation done.
blood tests and the whole deal.
And your response so far has been very good, but this is a really difficult kind of cancer to treat. There's even the possibility that you could lose your left arm, which as a musician I can only imagine is even more difficult. How do you think about that?
Yes, that was a life change. Like, once the doctor, that's a day I will never forget, once he told me I had cancer. It's a day I will never forget. But the way I'm taking this is, there is something that's not under my power, that I'm trying to be very positive, you know, about the whole deal. That's all I can do. And I don't know. Going through this, I'm trying to go through this with a smile on my face, just because it is what it is. I never got upset. I never got sad about the whole deal. I just try to be positive about it. And
Wagner, I know you have a lot of people pulling for you, and I hope that we can talk again as the treatment goes on, and I hope it continues to go well. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Walter and Wagner Caldas are known as the Brazilian Twins. They lead a band based in Cedar Falls, Iowa. We've been talking about their music and their journey, and we'll go out with their cover of Wake Me Up. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When the University of Iowa's Hanscher Auditorium was flooded, a great deal was lost, including the building, of course. But the pianos that were there survived until there was a plumbing problem at the storage facility later on. Now, as the new Hanscher is being built at the University of Iowa, opening in the fall of 2016, Hal Ide, a musician and former assistant box office manager at Hanscher, and his partner Richard Gloss decided to make a donation to Hanscher of a contribution toward a brand new Steinway grand piano. They also ended up being part of picking out that piano, which was a very special experience. And Hal Ide is here with me today to talk about it. Hello, Hal.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Now, first of all, where did the idea of making this contribution, a contribution toward a new grand piano for Hanscher Auditorium, come from?
Well, Richard and I had both worked there for over 36 years, and they were great jobs. They were exciting jobs. We got to see everyone. We got to meet all kinds of people. So when it came time to retire, we decided we wanted to do something. We were sort of thinking along the lines of piano, and then one evening, Chuck Swanson, the executive director, said to us, "Would you guys maybe be interested in helping with the piano?" So it was just sort of kismet.
All right. So you already had the idea, and then that turned out to be exactly what they needed.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Why a piano? Why had you already been thinking about that? I mean, I know a lot of people have made a lot of contributions toward the new Hanscher. What is it about the piano that drew you?
Well, I'm a musician. Richard is a musician as well. He's actually a very fine pianist. I'm a hack. It's right at the center of the
being. But
you're
also a flutist and a composer.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Not a hack.
Right. And so the piano is right there on stage. It's right at the heart of what we love the most, which is classical music. You know, it'll be out in front of an orchestra for concertos. It'll be accompanying choirs. It just seemed like the best possible gift. So.
Now, when you decided then to make that contribution toward a new piano, did you have any idea that you would also be part of the process of selecting the piano?
No. No idea whatsoever.
So how did that come about?
I don't know. It just sort of grew. So we made the gift and we sat down and it was going to be a Steinway. There was never any question about that. That's the world's best pianos. They said, "Do you want to help pick this out? Do you want to pick it out?" And so, sure, of course. We didn't feel particularly qualified to do it in every way. It's a big decision. Actually, it was Richard's idea. He said, "Well, Emmanuel Ax, world famous pianist, has performed at Hansch Auditorium more than any other concert pianist. He's been there 8 times. Hansch brought him to Iowa City for the first time as a young concert artist at the start of his career. He did a benefit concert for us with Yo-Yo Ma, so he's been sort of a friend of the auditorium. And Richard said, why not ask him and see if he would help us out?
So when you buy a new Steinway grand piano, you don't just say, hey, send us one.
No, you don't. You don't. It's a big commitment.
Right. Yeah. You and Richard went to New York City. Who all went with you?
Chuck Swanson, the executive director of the auditorium, and his wife. Kirk Davis, a piano rep from West Music. West Music has this region for Steinway dealership. We were also met there by Steve Carver, who used to be the piano technician for the School of Music at the University of Iowa here. He's now the technician for the Juilliard School in New York City, a big-time job, and he's just great. And so he said, yeah, he would come down and meet us there as well.
And
so.
What was it like when you got there? I mean, is there a showroom or were you in a warehouse? Where did you go?
This is at the factory. And I guess the most surprising thing is when you go for the day. And it's right attached to the factory, but it's a lovely room where you select the piano, high ceiling, wooden floor, nice bright
best
sound.
Best acoustics, right?
Yes, yeah. And then right next to it, there's sort of a conference room with a fridge and stuff where you can sort of hang out and survive. And so they start by giving you a tour of the factory, which is actually kind of important because then you know much more what's involved and all the little minutiae, you know, to look for. They bring you lunch. They give you all the time you want with those pianos. There were 5 in that room for us to choose from.
And so did they pre-select the 5 that you would see based on some sort of qualification given the size of the hall? Or why those 5?
Well, what we were after was a Model D, which is the granddaddy, the big 9-foot, the biggest piano they make. And I think that these were the 5 that they had ready at that point. It takes a year to make one of these pianos. They are completely handmade. So it's not like there's, you know, 40 or 50 of them at one time.
Right, right. So these were the 5.
These were the 5, and yes.
How much does a piano like that cost?
$133,000.
Wow. All right. So this is a significant investment in every way.
Right.
Now, you also were there and kind of a special day even at Steinway too, right?
Yes. So this is an incredible company. The work culture there is just amazing. These are very skilled artisans and craftsmen working throughout this factory. This was a employee appreciation day. And I think they do that 4 or 5 times a year.
Really? Okay.
And they bring in Steinway artists to do concerts right on the factory floor. And for this one, it was the 5 Browns, which are 5 siblings, 3 girls and 2 guys who play a piano quintet. So there were 5 grand pianos on the factory floor, and they did a little concert.
Wow.
And then they wheeled out a 7-foot Steinway piano cake that had been made by the cake boss, which I guess is
right.
A reality TV show.
Yeah, that's
show,
a thing.
So, yeah.
Wow. So now you'll be on a reality TV show as well. Did this start to feel really surreal?
Yes, it did. It was, first of all, just walking into the showroom and seeing 5 9-foot Steinway grands lined up is something I've never seen before. And it just kind of takes your breath away for a moment. because they're beautiful.
Right.
That beautiful, shiny
black.
Yeah,
they're showstoppers if there's just one.
yeah, that beautiful, shiny black finish, you know. And I got to say, there was not a fingerprint in sight on any one of those pianos. They were beautiful.
Wow. So when it came time to test them out, how did that go? I know you said Emmanuel Axe was there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of process did you go through in playing and listening?
Well, arduous. So there were five of them. And we had a little time in the late morning before Mr. Axe got there. And so Richard just went from one to another and played about 20 bars, 24 bars, went right down the line. They each had a very, very stunningly unique personality
really?
To them.
Yes. So, okay, yes. And I want to play some audio because I know, and this was audio you took with your phone.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, of Richard playing. And I think that this is three different pianos in this audio clip. So let's listen for just about 30 seconds. We'll see if we can tell the difference between the different pianos. So let's listen. Okay, I don't have the ear for this. They all sound amazing to me. So in comparing the different sounds, you said they each had their own vibrant personality, but what were you looking for?
We wanted a well-rounded character that plays well in all different situations, something that can be powerful out in front of an orchestra, something that can have intimate conversations in chamber music, something that can accompany the university choirs. This piano has to sort of be a jack of all trades. So in talking about sound, we use a lot of things, terms like bright, powerful, warm or cold. So we just spent time with each piano trying to ferret out its personality.
Was it easy to rule out a couple? Were there a couple where you're just like, no, that one doesn't do it for me?
Yes.
Really?
But it changed.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't easy at all,
yeah.
Was it?
No, it wasn't. So it seemed, you know, after the first run through, it seemed easy to discount number two. We thought, okay, well, we can just sort of write that one off. And we started to become enamored of number three and number five. That love affair lasted for a while. Then we started to really like number four. And then we took a break. Then Emmanuel Axe came in. And, of course, right off the bat, he played a few bars on each piano. And he chose number two.
Oh, which you had already ruled out.
We had ruled out. And we thought, oh, dear, well, now what, you know? But he, you know, that was his first pass through. And I think we were all a little encouraged to see that he was going through the same process we were, getting to know them, playing a few different things. Some, you know, he played mostly big stuff, Brahms and Beethoven. He did do some softer. I think he played a little Ravel and maybe some Chopin a little bit, just trying out different things with these.
And different feelings.
Yeah.
And how did you vote?
It didn't come down to a vote, really. So it came down to number one and four. That's where Axe was really landing, and we were kind of on board with him there, and Richard was in agreement. And so it came down to those two. And, of course, they were three pianos apart. And so Axe said, you know what, we need to move these all. We need to get these other pianos out of the way and put these side by side and have them not
moving 9-foot pianos can't be. Oh, let's just all shove it.
Well, you know what? Steinway has a new caster system on those pianos, and they move like
butter. They move
butter.
Good, okay.
They really do, yeah.
So once you got them next to each other.
That then we spent a little more time with each one, and finally agreed on number four.
And now, when you think about that, does it feel certain? Do you feel like, yes, we made the absolute right choice?
I do feel that way. Yeah, I feel really good about it. There were a few. There, like number five, was huge. It was the monster. It had the most big, brilliant, bold sound. But we didn't think it would be good in other settings. So that, you know, that was easy to rule that one
right.
out. But I think we did make a good choice. The other thing is that these pianos will change over time. So
when does the piano come to Iowa?
It should be here at the end of October.
Wow.
Yeah.
I asked you earlier why a piano was something that you were thinking about in making a gift to Hancher. But, you know, it's not as if you and Richard are people who are, you know, wanting to leave millions of dollars to the university or something like that. This is a very significant contribution for you. And you clearly wanted to do something significant and special for Hancher Auditorium. Why is it so important to you and Richard to make this gift?
Because music has made such a huge impact on our lives. Music is, you know, you enter your own special little world when you're making it or listening to it. And this piano will hopefully let other people into that world too.
When you imagine the future of this piano, what do you think about?
Oh, so many things. For one thing, I think about Emmanuel Ax playing a solo recital in the hall. I think about some of our friends and colleagues in the music faculty who will play this piano or play with someone who's playing this piano. Students at the university who I hope have a chance to play this piano or be in a choir that this piano is accompanying.
To have the opportunity to pick out the piano, what does that mean to you?
It's a very personal thing. It's a very personal thing, and it just felt like we were really participating in it, in making that choice.
So
it just
you
felt good.
Yeah, and you and Richard will always have this personal bond with this instrument. So you'll be going to many Hancher performances, I'm sure, in the coming years.
Indeed.
Do you think about what that'll be like to sit in the audience and listen and look at this magnificent instrument and think, yeah, I remember when that was in the factory warehouse and
right.
I was there.
Exactly. I just hope I like it.
I can't imagine that you will not like it.
Oh, sure.
Do you? And so the Hancher Auditorium will open in 2016. Do you have a hope for maybe the first person who will lay hands on that piano once Hancher is rebuilt and reopened and beautiful?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, I would like to see Emmanuel Ax there. If I had a wish list, I mean, Uchida, there's just so many. I would love to see Joni Mitchell sitting up there playing that
right?
piano, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
do you get visitation rights? Do you get to
– We haven't discussed that.
You should probably check into that. Oh, Hal, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, Charity.
Hal Eide and his partner, Richard Gloss, made a donation to Hancher Auditorium, a contribution toward a brand new Steinway grand piano that will be in Hancher Auditorium when it opens in fall of 2016. They got to go to New York City to the Steinway factory to help pick out that piano, a very special experience. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime. We love to hear from you. We love to hear your suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show in the future. We love to hear your response to things you've heard on the show in the past. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter @IPRTalk. I'm there as well @CharityNebbe. I am Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.